You're listening to the ISACA podcast. I'm your host, Safia Kazi, and in this CyberPros Exchange series episode, I'm excited to be joined by Frank Downs and Dustin Brewer. Frank is director and subject matter expert of ISACA's cybersecurity practice, and Dustin is ISACA's manager and cybersecurity product platform developer. In this episode, we're talking about the way that cybersecurity is portrayed in pop culture. So to begin, why might we want to evaluate the way that cybersecurity is portrayed in pop culture? And can you both give us some examples of good depictions you've seen of what cybersecurity careers are actually like?
So Dustin and I were talking about the cybersecurity needs the other day, and specifically how we started to wonder why there is such an issue with bringing people into cybersecurity. Now, you can argue about a lot of different elements of it, right? Maybe people don't know enough about cybersecurity or know cybersecurity. But when I was thinking about that, I feel like if there's something that anyone who's watched any kind of news channel for any amount of time, anyone who's seen any of the news lately has kind of realized that, yes, cybersecurity is in fact a real thing. So I always struggle with this mentality of not enough awareness. People don't know what cyber is and so forth. There's been some interesting studies. There was one last year that I thought was really interesting where 90% of graduates did not consider cybersecurity as a career, and it made us kind of wonder why, right? You have this huge need. Cybersecurity is in general, and I'll say this anecdotally, but there's also a lot of data out there, hard data, to support it, a decent paying field, and you will be able to find a job if you're able to do it. So we're kind of talking about what's the missing link there. And I think one of the things that's most interesting is this representation in popular culture of cybersecurity compared to what doing cybersecurity actually is, right? It's you look at a lot of popular culture presentations. The earliest one I can think of was, what was that 90s movie, Dustin? The Net with Sandra Bullock,
yep,
right?
Yep,
you remember that movie?
Oh, yeah.
That was something like... She was a game designer or software designer or something, and somehow she figured out the escape button was very important in this, right? Like there was some special super bug that you press escape and whoa, like the world blows up and stuff. And I'm probably going to get this wrong and someone's going to call me out on it, but there's like some corporation or something that's like, they can't know about the escape button and stuff like this. There's huge intrigue and everyone's running around making it look like really, really, really cool. And in reality, I mean, I'm pressing the escape button right now, right?
Trying to get out of this podcast?
Ah, yeah, right? Eject! Ah! No, this is not working, right? You press the escape button and nothing's happening, right? So I think that's kind of – I'm wondering if maybe that has something to do with it because you have such an incongruous, like, vision of what cyber is. I don't think I've ever really seen something – because I've seen so many movies – out there, there's so much stuff in popular culture that kind of reflects what people think cyber should. Whoa, remember, even NCIS Cyber, they even said NCIS Cyber, and I don't think I've really seen anything that I can recall is 100% accurate. What do you think, Dustin? Have you seen anything like that?
Yeah, you know, honestly, and this might be a little controversial, but one of the best hacking scenes I've ever seen in a movie is on the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And she kind of jumps into what looks kind of like a Metasploit kind of terminal in order to hack into somebody else's computer. And the main character does this. And I was just like, oh my, yes, there it is. There it is right there. That's what it is. And she's there for like hours, you know, trying to do something.
Which is how long it takes.
Right. And, right? And going into that, one of my favorite hacker movies of all time is of course Hackers, which, yeah. 90% of that movie is just ridiculous. But, one of the scenes in there is, you know, they get this part of this file and they're trying to do analysis on it. And the main character is sitting there and they have this like time lapse film going where like everybody else behind him is like, you know, ordering pizza and like just kind of like messing around and not really doing anything. But he's sitting in front of this computer for hours and hours and hours and hours and doing analysis on this one file just to understand what the one file is. That's the most accurate representation of cybersecurity and cyber operations that I've seen, because that's the kind of it's dedication, and like you have to love it so much that you're willing to sit there and stare at ones and zeros while all your friends are, you know, doing whatever they're doing behind you or, you know, doing whatever they're doing in the scene. But you have that kind of dedication where you're just focused and you love it so much that you don't even care that your friends are out having a good time. You're sitting there and you're doing your job and you love it.
And I really like, I agree with you on that. I think there actually was one example, and I actually like to show this in some of my classes that I instruct too. You guys probably remember that Bradley Cooper show or movie Limitless, where he took that magic pill and it was like, it unlocked your brain.
Yeah.
I want to say it was like 2015, they made a show off of it. Now the show did not last past one season, but it did have in one episode where he's like, okay, and I've realized I have to hack the mainframe or something like that. And then he does kind of this voiceover as he starts typing on the computer. He goes, you know what? A lot of media and so forth will have you think that hacking is really cool. You know, you just type the code and all of a sudden you're in the mainframe and stuff like that. And what they don't tell you is it's hours and days of work.
Absolutely.
So instead of watching me do monotonous work for hours and days, here is a montage of cute kittens and neat explosions and stuff like that. So they actually did that. And I was like, yeah, that's about right. I will say also, one other example of where they've explained something technically correct was, did you ever see that show, Mr. Robot?
I've seen a couple episodes, yep.
Yeah, the very first episode at the beginning, he finds this guy who's doing some criminal activity on tour, and he actually breaks down the whole process of how he identified that this guy was the criminal and so forth, you know, online and in the process. He explained exactly, you know, how Tor works in a lot of different ways. Things that, like, people just don't, the Tor being, for our listeners, the Onion Router, which is one of the most, if not the most, secure VPNs on the network, or on the internet, as long as you're willing to, or if we're going to use the 1992 term with Sandra Bullock, right, the net, as long as you don't mind trusting strangers, Tor is great, because you have these nodes that are always changing, and all your out egress point and ingress point are always changing all the time. It's hard to track anyone doing anything at all on it. So it was a really great example in that compared to, like, and I compare that to, though, Project Scorpion. I watched like the first episode of that show and I knew something was up when they're like, all right, we've got the Ferrari, let's go. And they're like in this Ferrari or some, maybe it was a Lamborghini, something that was going, and they were trying to ride under this airplane as the airplane, this big passenger airline, like a Boeing, came low enough to the ground where they could take the thumb drive and climb up one of the landing gears, but not quite on the ground or something, to take up, to give them the thumb drive so they could get the special thumb drive to plug into the special computer to save them from like the ransomware or something like that. And I think when it comes then to looking at people who are trying to identify what they want to be in, you have what's presented by culture and then what the reality is. And what's interesting, right, with all of this is there doesn't seem to be a huge desire to change the cultural portrayal of it. Like, and I don't know, and Dustin, maybe you have an idea on this. I don't know if that's because people just don't want to learn more about it or don't care about it, or they've just seen it and they're like, nah, we need to make this look cooler. I don't know where that stems from.
You know, from what I've seen, I think what we are looking at, and sometimes I like it, right? So, for example, we have a new exploit come out. I love using this example. Spectre and Meltdown came out. When Spectre and Meltdown came out, somebody made these graphics for them where it was like a ghost.
Oh,
like
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and like a melting thing, and they were like these graphics. And Heartbleed, when Heartbleed came out, it was this like thing with SSL, and it was a heart, and then like there was like blood coming out of it. But the thing about that kind of imagery is that it sticks in non-technical people's minds, and they're like, oh, there was a new hack that came out. It's something that kind of grabs the general public and says, oh, hey, this is like a serious thing. Look, we actually have a graphic for it. That kind of mentality helps capture people's attention a little bit better, who might not be interested in it otherwise. So I hate it and I love it, right? Because people have this mentality of, oh, Dustin's in cybersecurity, so he's going against the guys who are in their mother's basement wearing hoodies, drinking Mountain Dew, and eating Hot Pockets, right? Like that's.
First of all, I resent that. I'm in a basement right now.
I'm actually drinking Mountain Dew right now, so it's okay. It's okay to do all those things. But my point is like that's the kind of the mentality that people have. Now, if that's the kind of mentality people need to have in order to be cognizant of what is going on around them. Like, okay, because that kid is in his mom's basement eating Hot Pockets and hacking your computer, don't click on links that, you know, you're not supposed to. Don't pick up any thumb drive off the side of the road and plug it into your computer. You know, the list goes on and on I guess, proper cyber hygiene, or we can even dive into culture of cybersecurity, right, in that case. So I do have a love-hate relationship with it. And I've had to learn, it's funny because I think we kind of grew up with it where we've had to learn to ignore it. Whereas yeah. I noticed that people, for example, my friends and family who are doctors, friends and family who have advanced degrees and other things, and they see like a portrayal of their job on TV and they get really annoyed by it. And they're like, no, that's not right at all.
I would never hang the IV to drip in that fashion.
Right. Yeah. No, oh, that was wrong. And then, you know, like we grew up like thinking that, you know, it was what was in Hollywood. It turned out not to be what was in Hollywood. We still love it. Okay. It's okay. And then again, we have this love hate relationship with it because it brings to light cybersecurity issues. And it also gets interest. I mean, if it gets that one kid who's like, you know what, oh, that, you know, that looked really cool, and then he goes into it and ends up loving it, then I think we, you know, Hollywood did its job, right? For me, and I think I've talked about this in a previous podcast before, but for me, it was the idea of taking something and making, you know, taking a piece of a device or taking a piece of software and making it do something that it was never truly designed to do. That always just fascinated me. And the best I can kind of come up with in my head is, of course, when I was a kid, I was totally into video games. I had the PlayStation, the original PlayStation, and mod chips, right? You could install a mod chip.
So yeah, I remember the mod chips.
Games and then play. And again, that's totally illegal. I'm not saying anybody out there should do it, or that should be a reason why anybody gets.
We're not even really saying Dustin did it.
That's right. I never said I did it, but it fascinated me that one could do that if they wanted to. And I guess you could say that was definitely a very interesting thing. And then, of course, when the iPhones came out and there was jailbreaking. And the interesting thing about that story, though, is that iPhones came out and they originally didn't allow third-party apps. It was just the only thing that was available in the App Store was whatever Apple wrote.
Or tethering, by the way.
Or tether. That's right. And so this ragtag group of hackers went out, created their own, you know, first of all, jailbroke the iPhone, created their own online app store where you could have third-party apps, and then Apple basically, you know, they didn't admit it, but they basically took the idea from these people, and they're like, oh, okay, yeah, now we're allowing third-party apps too. Anybody can write it. And I mean, that's been a humongous.
Just put your credit card information here, right?
Yeah, that's right. A humongous revenue stream for them, right? So it's funny how these hacks kind of like, they start off as hacks, and then Apple did the right thing, right? They adopted it, and they're like, oh, yeah, people are going to do this anyways. Let's go ahead and monetize it.
In fact, conspiracy theory time, I just saw the other day, I was looking at Apple's financials because the new iPhone's coming out, and they were talking about how they're not so dependent upon it as a product succeeding anymore because they're making so much off of services and apps and so forth. And all I can, and now during this discussion, I'm pretty sure, Dustin, we just realized that all of these Apple executives and shareholders, they're going to have to go out and thank these jailbreakers for saving the business.
And you see that too. Like, you know, nowadays you do see, sometimes you see articles where 15-year-old breaks in a database, you know,
right.
Company hires 15-year-old, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
And that's kind of the right reaction, right? Because the 15-year-old probably wasn't going to do anything malicious. They were just curious and they wanted to see if they could. Right.
Right.
And so you hire that for, or, you know, you send them to college and then hire them, or you hire them right off the bat and, or, you know, however you want to do it. But I, the bounty programs obviously are trying to do that as well. And I see these new, you know, revenue streams coming in from people breaking into cybersecurity. But
it's really nice too, if those bounty programs, to see that less and less are they turning into, because for what was it? I'd say a few years ago, not actually, I mean, still recently enough, where it almost seemed like the bounty programs were just, you know, a great big thing of bait by the company to be like, yeah, we'll give you money if you tell us what's wrong. Yeah. And then next thing you know, you see a bunch of legal action against the person who's just trying to collect a bounty. And there, I mean, you have whole legal, I've met more than one lawyer who makes a lot of their revenue off of just trying to represent hackers who don't want to go to jail when they submit a bounty. So that's what's interesting. I think also from that perspective, that having these things are kind of improving that cultural impression for the individuals who are getting in there. And the fact that it's like, you have example, what is that? Google's Project Zero, right? where they have a whole just group that their whole job is to figure out how things are broken and can be hacked. And I think that helps improve. I mean, still, it doesn't really change that how the day-to-day is with cybersecurity. It still isn't going to make you invite you to, like, hack lasers and shoot them at the moon unless that's one of the things that they have to hack, right? But I think things like that are helping slowly, not nearly quick enough, by the way, but slowly improve the cultural perception of cybersecurity and working. It's not all just illegal hacking and, you know, drugs and so forth.
So it's really hard to talk about cybersecurity in pop culture without also talking about AI and robotics in pop culture. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the misconceptions as they relate to cybersecurity and careers in cyber?
One of the things I've heard, especially in the last 3 years, is like, well, I mean, AI is going to get rid of cybersecurity. We're not going to need people and stuff like that before. I mean, there's only so much. I'm like, there's no way, because there's always new applications coming out. There's always new implementations of things happening. There's always new something. And that always, always, always provides an opening for people to hack into something. Some of the coolest security capabilities can come from learning how these attacks happen, right? And so in doing that, you're able to better protect certain systems. And, you know, well, if I do a small rift on this here, then and we turn it on itself, we can do something that people hadn't thought of before in order to keep a system safe. So, yeah, if we can figure out how to, in the culture, make that more readily known, then I think we might be able to help combat that impression that a lot of people have, and that a lot of these movies are doing us a disservice in.
Absolutely. Yeah, and going back to that too, you mentioned AI, and I think AI has been misrepresented, honestly, not only by Hollywood.
You mean it's not a panacea?
yeah, and it's even the culture itself has kind of misrepresented AI. You know, you see the movie War Games, where, you know, Matthew Broderick hacks into a Department of Defense computer, and the AI in the computer kind of goes nuts and thinks that Russia's trying to have a missile attack on itself, right? So, like, I mean, back in the 80s, we thought, you know, people thought AI was, like, so sophisticated, it would launch a missile and do all these kinds of things. I was recently at a conference at MIT, and one of the speakers they had got up and kind of talked about, you know, the bleeding edge of AI and what it can do. And he shows this picture, and he shows this game of Pong happening, and the paddles are moving by themselves. And he's like, that's about as sophisticated as AI has gotten so far. We can make it play Pong against itself. So
yeah, exactly.
It's not quite there yet, right? And I'm sure there's probably more sophisticated algorithms out there, and Google probably has some amazing things that they're coming out with, and Apple as well. But it's not what everybody thinks it is, right? Like you said, it's not that fantasy. It's not the thing that's going to save everybody from, it's not the thing that's going to save everybody from cyber attacks. But again, you know, the AI representation in movies is just, I mean, it's years beyond, decades beyond what we currently have.
Everyone thinks it's going to be something like, what is it, Cortana from Halo or something like that, right?
Right.
When in reality, the one that I thought was most interesting, and maybe even a bit of an overreaction, by the way, was, I think it was either Facebook or Google or both of them made AIs that analyzed language so they could talk back and forth to each other, and then they flipped out when they're like, but then the AIs started making up their own words and whatnot, so we had to kill them. Like, okay, let's take a few steps back, right?
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, this is not an indication of sentience coming, you know, along to change the world and get rid of Excel spreadsheets, etc. We still are decades out from anything that could be like what culture is presenting it to be today.
So it seems like the capabilities of AI and robotics are greatly overestimated, but you don't really see much about the cybersecurity side of it. You know, for example, I'm thinking about Blade Runner, in which replicants or androids had to be caught, and rather than addressing the technology element of it, the film's mostly Harrison Ford chasing them around.
And maybe Harrison Ford's job would be a lot easier if there had been a cybersecurity professional.
But it seems like a lot of times the cyber job is just non-existent, or possibly worse, it's the most boring job. You'll see the cybersecurity professional stuck in an office and maybe sending GPS coordinates to a team who gets to be out in the field and do the fun stuff, like tackle suspects. So what are some of the fun elements of a career in cybersecurity, and what do you think it'll take for that to start being portrayed?
I mean, we tackle people at the office all the time, right? No, I think you're right. And I think for one point of that, I think that a lot of writers use it just as a plot mechanism It's like, oh no, I've written myself into a corner here and now we can't find the criminal. I know what I'll do. Oh, send in the cyber person for their, like, it's like a poorly used montage, right? It's send in the cyber person. Oh yeah, I got a guy. I'm going to give him a call. What's that? You cross-reference the database with the analyst and the times and the dates of the, you know, inputs. Oh yeah. The murderer's down the street. Right. So I think that's, you know, at least in those things like that. Do I think that they'll ever get to the point where they can present them in a way that makes it more appropriate or exciting? I think to an extent, I will say this, Mr. Robot does a decent job of that. The only thing I would say with that show is it can get real depressing and weird real quick, right, with the other elements in it. But, you know, there are security professionals who do the things that are presented in that show, and it is fun. There is some fun to it, but it's also like saying, I can't wait till there's a show that really highlights the joy of dentistry, right? Either you're really going to want to be a dentist or you're not, okay? There's very little in between with stuff like that. I'd say just safely put cyber in that category too. You're either really going to want to be in cyber. There's very few half-hearted cybersecurity professionals that I've personally met. You have to really love the weird and in order to really get into cybersecurity.
Right. You know, to your question as well, I think that, you know, I'll bring up another movie here, the movie Sneakers with Robert Redford. You know, I think that kind of combines a little bit of everything into what we would kind of call penetration testing. We can't all be penetration testers, right? And everybody thinks, and I'm sure if you talk to an actual NCIS investigator or an actual law enforcement officer, and you know, hey, you know, in the movies or in the show, they go and they tackle the guy, and they, you know, they're following leads and everything. And then guess what they're doing when they get back to the office? They're writing a really long, detailed report about it.
Exactly.
And that's what most of the job probably is writing detailed reports about everything that you did and how it happened, and you know, detailing you know, every minute or every second of the arrest, you know, for due process. So the same goes for cybersecurity. Writers, directors, actors have 30 minutes to an hour to show somebody, you know, hey, here's a day in the life. Here's a day in the job. And of course, they cut out the part where they're sitting there doing paperwork for 24 hours straight, right? To be able to arrest the guy or to be able to prosecute whoever, because that's incredibly boring, right? Nobody wants to watch an hour of somebody doing paperwork.
Yeah, and feel free to disagree with me, but I feel like the role of pop culture in cybersecurity versus some other industries is magnified because it's a fairly new field. You know, there are people who can say they come from a long line of doctors, but not a lot of people who can say that their great-great-grandfather was also in cybersecurity. So what exactly is the role of practitioners when it comes to drawing people into cybersecurity and perhaps clearing up some of the misconceptions that pop culture has created?
I think it's more of a communication thing. I mentioned earlier that survey that came out that showed that 9 out of 10 millennials didn't even consider becoming a cybersecurity professional. And when they asked the 1 out of 10 why, it's because they knew somebody, right? They knew somebody in it, and it made them think about it. I think that, and which is going to be difficult for cybersecurity, because cybersecurity, very similar to IT, is made up very prevalently of professionals who are, not all of them, but a lot of them tend to be a bit more inward thinking, right? More less likely to do some outreach and so forth. Isaka, in fact, is an incredible example of that not being the case, which always kind of boggles my mind, because Isaka's got over 150,000 members around the world and all these different chapters that they all get together on a regular basis, meet up and socialize. If you look at the IT world, that is very much not the case. You can't make more friends if people don't know you exist, kind of thing, right? So putting people in the cybersecurity field out there, making them accessible, making sure that people know where to go if they want to talk to people like that, I think that's going to be part of the solution.
Yeah, absolutely 100% agree. It's really hard to find somebody like that. That being said, it doesn't mean that people who are, you know, traditional IT types or traditional IT, you know, can't also, you know, reach out. And also that means that it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't reach out to them if you're not an IT person. These people are a wealth of information. They've been on the job for, you know, decades. They've been, you know, educated in this, and they're very intelligent people. And sometimes, you know, it comes down to the community reaching out to them as well, which I think is something that we're finally starting to understand in business, right? Whereas IT used to support business, business is now being built around IT, right? So it's no longer, you know, I'm in this room with you. You're all in this room with me now. So it's this interesting kind of dynamic shift that's happened with that, in that, you know, IT needs business and business needs IT just as much. And it's time to work together. And, you know, whether that means, you know, reaching out on one side or the other, I think both sides, you know, have a role in communication and in understanding.
Thanks, Frank and Dustin. And that's all we have time for in this episode of the iSoca podcast. But if you're interested in hearing the monthly interview with Frank and Dustin, be sure to subscribe to the iSoca podcast and leave us a rating.